From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is Political Rewind. Now, if my voice sounds a little unfamiliar, don't worry. You're in the right place. I'm Kevin Riley, the editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Today, I'm filling in for my good friend, Bill Nigut. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show today. And we'll be looking at the impact of Hurricane Michael, which hit Georgia just about a year ago. Don't forget, you can log on to GPB News Facebook page right now, and not just hear us, you can see us too. We'll monitor your comments, and you can also comment on Twitter, @politicsGPB. I've got some great guests today, so let's meet them. First, here in the studio with me, Representative Darlene Taylor, a Republican member of the Georgia House of Representatives who's from Thomasville. Welcome, Representative Taylor. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Also here in the studio, Joshua Sharp, a reporter from the AJC, who covered Hurricane Michael for us. Now, Josh, I know you've been on these hurricanes a lot, and as it turns out, I thought you were just a dedicated reporter, but apparently you're after a home-cooked meal when you volunteer to cover these things.
Well, I would say I am a dedicated reporter, but I'm also from Waycross down in the Okefenokee Swamp in South Georgia, so I like to go home and get to see all the folks and make sure they're represented in the big newspaper.
Okay, well, thanks for being here, Josh. We also have two guests who are joining us from GPB's studios in Macon. So let's welcome them. First, Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black. Commissioner Black, thanks so much for making the trip to Macon from Perry, where I know you're at the Georgia National Fair. So how about you let us, our listeners, have a little brief update on how the fair is going down there.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be with you. The fair is going great, and thanks for the quick. By the way, you sound good too on radio. I want to compliment you. It's going good. Perry is, I tell you, the best place to be in Georgia this week. It was an interesting. We may get into a little bit of that in a little while, but it was an interesting fair last year. But we're certainly open for business, and hope many of your listeners would come join us. I think it could be a record weekend.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear. Now, also joining us from the Macon studios is Republican Representative Clay Perkle of Ashburn, Georgia. Now, he's also a farmer, as I understand it, and he's a really great guest for us to have in this situation. So welcome, Representative Perkle.
Thank you so much. It's very kind of you to have me.
And our final guest is joining us by phone, Phil Buckalter. He's a farmer from Jakin, which is in Early County on the Alabama border in southwest Georgia. Welcome, Phil.
Well, thank you for having me, too.
Okay. So, October 10th of last year, a year ago tomorrow, Hurricane Michael, a powerful Category 5 storm, made landfall in the Florida Panhandle. It soon pushed into Georgia, where it would devastate the agriculture and timber industries of the state. You know, these days, the news comes at us so fast and furious. We've even had other hurricanes since then. It's only been a year ago. And Michael was a historic storm for us. Let's take you back to that day.
Hurricane Michael is barreling toward the Florida Panhandle.
The wind was really picking up. And, of course, we had no access to find out what was actually happening. And we just kept waiting and waiting, and we heard it finally hit America, and you could hear things just banging, slamming.
It was still raining, and it was blowing pretty hard outside, and every now and then we could hear it could transform or blow up.
You could hear the wind just literally blowing signs. There's street signs that have been uprooted.
I was really nervous that a tree was going to come down on us, so yeah, we were nervous.
U.S. Senator Johnny Isaacson mentioned Sunday's storms Monday on the Senate floor as he continued to push for disaster funding for farmers in the wake of Hurricane Michael.
I'd also say a prayer of thanksgiving for the great opportunity we have to live in the Southeast, but also recognize that we are now at ground zero for tornadoes and those type of death-defying acts which are taking place.
Wow, does that bring back some memories. And Hurricane Michael produced some very, very grim numbers. Here's some of them. At least $300 million of cotton was lost in Georgia. $560 million of the pecan crop was lost. In one county, South Georgia, the entire pecan harvest was lost. According to the University of Georgia, $2.5 billion in damage to Georgia agriculture. And there was a horrible toll on people and their homes and their farms. So I'm going to ask each of our guests to share a personal memory of Hurricane Michael, because each of them had a unique perspective on it. Josh, I'll start with you. As a reporter who was covering the story, we sent you to cover it. What's something you really remember about that?
I tell you, what I remember most was a moment about a month after the storm. I was down in Colquitt, Georgia, and I was at the home of a man named John Edward Wells. And he's a farmer there and also works at the volunteer fire department. And we were standing in his front yard of the home he'd lived in for decades, and there was a 3-4 foot wide red oak tree that had crushed the right side of the house. And the house was a complete loss. I mean, the yard was just torn up. Everything was gone. And I was talking to him about the emotional impact of this, and he told me about how this was the home where he had lived with his wife who had passed away from cancer years before. And I realized that this place that he had lost was the site of so many memories that he had of his ex-wife who he loved dearly, and that his daughters had of his wife, who they their mother, who they loved dearly. And he told me he thought this was probably the second worst thing that had ever happened to him. Another thing that really struck me is that when you're driving down this road, this country road, to get to his house, you see what I remember seeing is the pine tree snap like toothpicks. I'm from southeast Georgia, and I've seen snap pine trees before in a tornado, but this looked like there'd been 1,000 tornadoes torn loose everywhere. And some of that timber belonged to John Edward Wells, and that was going to be his retirement. But it was all gone.
Wow, that's really something. Now, Representative Taylor, you're from Thomas County, right there on the Florida border, so I'm sure that there are some things you saw that were unbelievable.
Yes, it was. You know, when you look back, the question is, where were you when this happened or that happened? And I remember it well. We had spent the days preceding in and out of the emergency center planning for it. We did everything we could to prepare for that storm, and it still wasn't enough. It was such a powerful storm. No one expected it to have the power that far inland. Compared to most, Thomas County, we were damaged, and we had some pretty rough stuff that was done in Thomas County, but it was nothing compared to some of the counties a little further to the west. The further west you went, the more damage you saw. I can tell you, we lost one person in the storm. The little girl was actually from Grady County, and she had gone to be safe to be with her grandparents, and that's where the terrible incident happened. But I will tell you, most of the time, people were hunkered down. They did what they could to prepare, again, never expecting this type of a storm to come through. We all remembered Kate when she came through, and it did damage, but again, nothing like this. I can tell you, my three counties, I have the most southwest corner of the state, was devastated. Grady County lost their tower, so they had no communications, both in the city and the county. The EMC is actually the one that provides a lot of the electric power. They lost not only lines down in trees and roads and things like that, they lost transformers. It was amazing what happened, but when you got to Decatur County, it was totally devastating. Decatur County and the city of Bainbridge, it's about as far as you can get west, and it's the most southern part of the state. I will tell you, the city of Bainbridge is a beautiful, picturesque town with lovely old homes and gigantic live oaks. These were restored, and it's a great, active downtown. The old oaks were gone. The pines were down. They looked like pickup sticks intertwined with electrical power lines. The damage was massive. Both roads in the city and the county were impassable for weeks. These big oaks that had been in people's front yard were across the streets. You couldn't get through. Businesses lost their entire building. Sometimes it was a roof and a side of a building. And I think the really hard part for our farmers were these whole crops that were gone. There was one farmer in particular had 100 100 acres of pecans, and they're gone. Hmm. It's a generation to rebuild that. The same with the pines that were gone. It was unimaginable to the communities that were barely recovering from a recession. It was a tough time.
Thank you for that. Commissioner Black, now you have a big job that required you to obviously get your arms around the big picture in the state. What did you observe during that time that still sticks with you?
Kevin, the early parts of the story would be in the State Operations Center, which we have responsibilities during events like this for fuel logistics and food safety, equine and companion animal rescue operations, livestock, all those kinds of things that we would do on a normal basis. But I guess to be able to watch the escalation of the storm to Category 5 and then it's Cat 3 when it comes across the Seminole County line, and at that juncture being absolutely powerless to do anything except pray for our friends, I stayed on the phone with a number of my producer friends in that region. I mean, throughout the heavier parts of the storm, when phone service would still, was still operable. I can remember, of course, again, we're trying to assess things on Friday morning when the skies cleared. We were able to get airborne. My colleague and good friend, the commissioner of the executive director of the Georgia Forestry Commission, we took a Forestry Commission helicopter out. We thought at that juncture perhaps what we could do that would be helpful for Atlanta media was that if we could strap a couple of GoPros and a couple of long lenses into a chopper that perhaps we could get something that would be useful to tell the story in the pictures. And so we were successful in doing that for about 3 hours on Friday. That really got, helped. I think it helped some of the media outlets in Atlanta, actually, where they couldn't get boots on the ground, and actually in some of the national media as well. So those things come back of things that you do the things that you're able to do. But there's no doubt. I guess Doug Evans from Fox 5, we were able to get Doug down there in about a week, and I guess that's the most poignant thing I remember of being in. We got him into the edge of Seminole County and Decatur County at Greg Calhoun's, one of his operations, and I know Doug and his partner never thought we were going to get there, but we dodged trees. We got to a corner of a field where the 350 acres of sweet corn laying down. Irrigation systems upended. Cotton that was picking 1,500 pounds to the acre was picked totally clean. There was nothing there. And devastation in the forest all in one location. And I'll never forget Doug Evans' eyes and near nausea, not from the bumpy roads, but just from the emotional impact of seeing what people like Greg Calhoun were going to have to manage through. So those certainly come to mind.
Now, you're there with Representative Perkle, who's a farmer. So, Representative Perkle, what was it like on your farm?
So, as I've listened to the stories that we've talked about over the last few minutes, the emotive response for me was nausea. It was the winds and not knowing and the electricity gone, and it was gone for a week or so. And but the thing that I most remember is at the crack of dawn when it's still dark, and I've got to go see what I have left, and driving down the road, the first field I come across is a cotton field. It was later planted. It was not ready for harvest yet, like a lot of mine was. And I looked at the cotton field in the din of the early morning hours, and if I had not planted the field myself, I would have swore that was a peanut field, because this big, tall, pretty cotton was completely on the ground. And just in the darkness of the morning, it looked like a peanut field. It was when I rode the block and I saw where I was picking 1,478 pounds per acre. Afterwards, I picked less than 400 pounds on that same field, and I saw all the cotton that's laid on the ground, and it was completely and utterly gone. I came back home, and I just cried like a baby. It was highly emotional for a not exceedingly emotional person. It was it's just the motive part. So that is, you know, we mentioned the $500 million and the $300 million and my timber friends, $800 million. We lost 1.5 million loads of timber on that day. 1.5 million loads. And it was just gone. If we were to take a massive interstate highway system from the Capitol to Seattle, Washington, and we used three lanes of roadway, and you stacked these loads of timber tight as cordwood back to back to back in a line, it would fill three lanes of traffic from Atlanta to Seattle and back.
Wow.
Much timber.
Unbelievable numbers. Now, Phil Buchalter on the phone with us. What can you tell us about what happened to your farm?
Well, we weren't prepared for that. We never seen anything like it. You know, we knew it was coming, but we just thought it would just slow down like it usually did. But it just didn't slow down. It just seemed like it just got rougher and rougher and rougher. And actually, I live in a pasture about a quarter of a mile from my mother and father, and me and my wife was at our house, and mom and daddy, they're about 80 years old, and so the phone lines were down, and so I told Susan, I said, I need to run down there and check on mom and daddy, you know, and so I went to the paved road, little short paved road to their house, and got down there, and we was trying to work on a generator and trying to get them a little power and this, that, and other. And then all, you know, I'm busy working, and all of a sudden I just kind of look out the window and I said, my gosh. I said, I got to get back to my wife. I know she's scared to death. And so I started going back to the house, and trees were across the road, so I couldn't get to the house, you know. Winds blowing and this, that, and other. So I got out and opened up the pasture gates and was watching tree limbs and everything else fall, and I drove across the pasture. And within, you know, I don't know how many hours it had been raining, the water was probably 2 foot deep. I actually thought I was going to bog down, so I had to cross a ditch. But I got back to my wife, and she was still holding it together, but I kind of left her out there by herself. But that was one of the worst things. I mean, besides the crops. The crops, you know, the next day when we went and looked at them, they were terrible. Me and my son, we picked cotton. And another man packing to 3:30 that morning before the storm, and it was his first crop year. And he had some wonderful cotton. And we picked 9 modules and tarped them off and pulled them down tight, and the wind was blowing, you know, but like I said, it was wonderful cotton. And in 3 or 4 days, whenever we could make it back to the cotton patch, 5 of the modules were just blown away. It actually looked like it had snowed in the trees. It just looked like snow. So that really hurt because it was his first crop.
Okay, well, Phil, thank you for that. It's time for us to get our first break in after hearing those emotional stories. When we come back, we'll talk about how farmers and the agriculture industry in Georgia are coping and recovering even still from Hurricane Michael's devastation. You're listening to Political Rewind on GPB. Back after this.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
At a camp in Dayton, Ohio, there's a program to help children whose parents are addicted to opioids. One camp activity, writing letters to addiction itself.
Dear addiction, why do adults like you? When I'm older, I will be against you. You make me not like my mom and dad, and it's sad. I hate you.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and GPBnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Kevin Riley, editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, filling in for Bill Niga today. Back with me in GPB's Atlanta studio, Representative Darlene Taylor, a member of the Georgia House, and Josh Sharp, a reporter for the AJC. Joining us from GPB's studio in Macon are Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black and Representative Clay Perkle. And on the phone, we have Phil Buckalter, a farmer from Jakin, Georgia. In the aftermath of the hurricane, Governor Deal reacted very quickly. The federal government was a little bit slower, and we'll talk about that, those issues at the federal level, in a bit. But within a couple weeks, on October 23rd after the hurricane, Governor Deal called for a special session of the Georgia legislature in order to pass a bill to provide money for cleanup of hurricane damage and help farmers in southwest Georgia. The special session opened on November 13th. So within 2 months, the legislature was acting. And on the 17th of November of last year, Governor Deal signed the bill, which was which included $270 million in hurricane relief, and then another bill that provided $200 million in tax breaks. So we're throwing a lot of numbers around, Commissioner Black. But at that time, what needs were the most pressing for Georgia's farmers?
Kevin, they were not necessarily immediately not replacing the loss of crop, but I think one of the things we were looking at, what the state could actually address, was there's something that we could do to positively get us in a positive preparatory mode for the following year's crop. We devised actually later the week after the hurricane a notion that if we could fund a loan program through the Georgia Development Authority, which we have responsibility for, that's a basically a farm bank for real estate loans, was there a way for we could help farmers meet their immediate needs, their credit issues for paying bills from the 2018 crop?
Well, Commissioner Black,
set them up where we can, move forward for the future. And that program came about pretty quickly, thanks to the quick action of the legislature.
Well, just to be clear, though, because not all of us are familiar with how farming works. When you talk about credit, you mean that, so I'm a farmer, my crop's lost, nothing I can do about it. But I've got to prepare for the next season, and in order to do that, I'm going to need to borrow money, and I'm going to need to get a good rate on that money if I'm going to survive.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes, that's exactly right. But you also had obligations remaining from 2018. You had a fertilizer bill. You had tractor payments to make. And so we were able to put together a really aggressive low-interest loan program that the legislature funded. The first tranche was $55 million back last fall, and then Governor Kemp and the legislature this year put another $20 million into that. We were able to eventually process and fund, with a matter of about 5 months, 276 loans, just shy of $75 million, with some very attractive interest rates, and there's no doubt that helped people. I just wish we could have had the speed of the response from the federal, of which we may talk about.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Now, Representative Taylor, you were called into that special session, and what was on your mind as you worked during that time?
When you look at this area and how it was devastated, and first thing you see are the farmers. They need to be back in the field working, raising crops, but that impact doesn't stop there. It affects the entire community and the region. You've got to remember, most of them had loans already with the local bank, so they were already obligated. And when they didn't have a crop that came in, what are they going to do? We were happy to be able to find a solution. And it isn't a gift. It is a loan process. And it is something that gave them hope they could go again. There's nothing like a farmer. That's a nothing you can do about it. What do you do when your crop is gone? Whether you had insurance or didn't have insurance, and it depends on where your particular crops are planted and which field. There was just so much that's tied into this one thing. But I was very happy that the governor stepped up and we were able to help them start the digging out process.
Now, Phil, let me ask you, as a farmer, I mean, what kind of help did you need, and then how did you get involved in a state program, or how did you go about, you know, dealing with this problem that you had as a farmer?
Well, the Georgia Authority, me and my son, we put in an application, and, you know, some folks has got to miss the boat, and me and Cody, we missed the boat. I think it was 30 or 40. We were, Gary said, the commissioner said it was about 270 loans, and I think we was about 330 and 331, so we missed that and all. So, you know, we just had to, you know, like, had to go take out another loan, you know, to try to finish up. Well, you know, luckily, each situation is different. Luckily, I was able to get my peanuts. They were probably all 400 or 500 pounds to the acre, but luckily, my farm, I got all my peanuts, you know, and but I lost all of my cotton. So you know, we got some crop insurance and all, and so you know, you can't buy but so much insurance, you know, you'll be insurance poor, you know, and we had some insurance money, and then we had to make a float a loan, you know, and get some money to finish out the to pay the bank up, you know, but there was no profit left to, you know, for next year buying new equipment or anything like that. So it put an impact on us.
So I mean, in the end, for you, then what you're saying is, when all the smoke cleared, you were left with no money in your pocket. You survived it somehow, but didn't have any profit to work with. Now, Representative Perkle, as both a legislator and a farmer, I mean, you kind of have a unique perspective here. How did that go for you, and what, you know, when you were in special session, what role did you play in getting people to understand what was crucial here?
I did a world of radio and television interviews, as the commissioner has talked about, trying to get the word out. Talked to my colleagues in the House just to make sure everyone knew the importance and the devastation that the hurricane did bring. You throw out millions and millions, and at some point you become jaded, and you have to tell stories. You tell stories that people understand. And
well, why don't you tell us one? Give us one, and keep it tight and short here. We don't have as much time as we'd like, but what was one that you told people?
Well, let me just add that Commissioner Black sitting here with me in the studio, and I would like to say how awesome and unconventional it was that he and Thomas Carter of the GDA took a program that did not exist and efficiently and effectively provided funds for farmers that absolutely had to have it in order to survive. Just a few months ago, I ran across a first-time farmer. You know, last year was his second crop, and he lost it. And the only way he was able to go was through the GDA with the funds that loan funds that the state has put forward. And to take a program that did not exist to one that is efficiently and effectively appropriating the funds was just a monumental task. I personally missed out. I'm like you, Phil. I missed out. As a legislator, I couldn't apply. I did not feel right in applying for the assistance until the money was gone. And
so speaking
I advocated for it.
Yeah, speaking of missing out, let's talk about what happened with the federal government. As we were doing the research for this show, it's almost impossible to summarize how caught up in politics this aide got in Washington. So I won't try to do that, other than to say that no one could seem to agree, and aid to Puerto Rico was part of it, and the Democrats blamed the Republicans, and Republicans blamed the Democrats. But from the perspective of being a politician, Representative Taylor. I mean, what was going on in Washington?
It was very, very frustrating to see what was going on in your hometown, in your communities, and this hurt very much. I know they've been working very hard to get it done. We talked to our legislators, our senators, our congressmen. Everyone was trying to get something done. We kept running into brick walls. It's very frustrating. I kind of, as I do a lot of reading, and I came across a quote from President Eisenhower that sort of filled this in for me. Farming looks mighty easy when your plow's a pencil and you're 1,000 miles from the cornfield. And I think that was part of it. They didn't get it.
Commissioner Black, have you ever heard that one before? And what was your message to both folks in Washington and here in Georgia during that time?
Well, Kevin, I think one of the lessons that all of Congress could have learned, hopefully, from this situation moving forward, is that there was a great bipartisan effort in the state of Georgia. The rest of the country had taken the lead as Congressman Austin Scott and Congressman Sanford Bishop to really lay out the merits of the program, the need, and let's try to help our citizens. But unfortunately, it started with a $12 billion package. $3 billion of that was targeted for agriculture, and then 5 months of division and several iterations where the goalpost was moved, and ultimately to wind up with a $19 billion package, yet $3 billion of that it never grew for ag, and we're still in the throes of trying to negotiate the final arrangements for the block grant, because there's federal disaster through USDA, but the intent of that legislation was to block grant the funds to the states and let the states administer their own programs, and we're still heavily involved in those negotiations with USDA right now, and I hope we're down to a matter of days rather than weeks and months of coming to some to get the resources on the ground for our people.
Well, we're gonna get to what's going on now, but Josh, I mean, at the newspaper, it seemed like we ran endless stories about this fiasco. I mean, our colleagues were trying to sort it out for our readers all the time.
Yeah, there were a lot of stories. It seems like we could almost never write enough stories about it because there was always some other issue, some new problem that. That stalled this aid, that stalled people's lives in one way or another. And only recently have we seen a glimmer of hope with the announcement last month that the Agriculture Department is taking applications for $3 billion in aid from the federal government.
Okay, so it's time for our last break, and we're going to continue this line of conversation because when we come back, we're going to talk about what the future holds for Georgia farmers and the state's agricultural industry. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
I'm Sarah Ammon. I own Out of the Blue in Blue Ridge, Georgia. We specialize in wines from around the world and high-end cheeses, and we also have craft beer. I think a lot of people that listen to GPB, it's just part of their day-to-day routine. I have people coming up from Atlanta just to see what Out of the Blue is all about because they hear our ads all the time, and they say so.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how the same organization that fueled conspiracy theories about the Clintons in 2016 is behind the discredited story involving Joe Biden and his son's work in Ukraine. The organization was founded by Steve Bannon. We talk with journalist Joshua Green, who wrote a book about Bannon. I hope you'll join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Kevin Riley, filling in today for Bill Nigut. Here with me in Atlanta are Representative Darlene Taylor and Josh Sharp. Joining us from Macon, Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black and Representative Clay Perkle. And on the phone, we have Phil Buckalter, a farmer from Jakin, Georgia. So, Josh, I cut you off a little bit as we got to the break about what the latest is in terms of help for farmers.
Right. So Sonny Perdue, former governor, now agriculture secretary, last month announced that applications were being taken for $3 billion in federal aid for farmers who were hurt by Hurricane Michael. And in Georgia, there's 80 counties in which farmers are eligible to get this money under the application. But this money has still not come through for everybody. You know, there's a waiting list, and people are still frustrated. It's been a year. Some farmers, as I've been told, are facing foreclosure. Some aging farmers had to take on a lot of debt, and it really just turned things upside down for a lot of people. As Commissioner Black mentioned, the aid program that Purdue rolled out last month did not address the block grant question, which a lot of people were pushing for, including Governor Brian Kemp. So it's really far from over, and the people who I've talked to are still pretty frustrated and even, you know, just kind of confused. I was thinking about it this morning and trying to put myself into Phil's shoes and thinking about how, you know, you got trouble from the tariffs. You got trouble from Hurricane Michael. This year is a very dry year, which makes certain crops more difficult. Phil was telling me about some of that too. And it almost feels like in this past 12 months, Georgia farmers have been under siege. They cannot catch a break.
So, Commissioner Black, now let's talk about this aid. A lot of bureaucratic words being thrown around, and, you know, block grants, things like that. But how will it really work? I mean, in layman's terms, you know, how will it work and how fast will farmers get that money? And is it going to be too little, too late?
Don't think it's certainly, I hope it won't be too little. It's far too late. And if we can get the resources to the ground, I think it still can help some people. I don't think we're to the end of, completely the end of possibility. Kevin, block grants, let me quickly, you've got cotton and peanut and soybean and corn, normal things that we think about in agriculture. And they have normal ways of addressing emergency situations like this through USDA and those local offices. The desire of Congress was to give the Secretary the flexibility to address all of the other needs that were not in a normal program, and to do so through block granting monies through that $3 billion, a portion of the $3 billion, to the states to address their specific needs. Timber, cattle, both dairy and beef, nursery, pecan, vegetable, and poultry. Those are the primary commodities that we will be dealing with at the state once USDA issues the block grants to us. Now, what we had to do is devise some pretty creative formulas of how to report it, how to, you know, take the pie once you know how big the pie is, how do you divide that up, and provide the assistance. We're still in those negotiations. Georgia was the first to have a plan turned in on time. But yet we've been in those negotiations since July, and it's important to get it right. But I'm hoping we're going to focus more on speed in the coming days.
So, Representative Perkle, I mean, you mentioned in terms of the state program, that was not something you could take advantage of. Now, will this federal assistance make a difference to you, or what's your perspective on it? Again, you're both a farmer and a lawmaker, so I think your take on it's particularly valuable for our audience.
Well, I do hope that it will come. As the commissioner mentioned, there has been no help yet for timber producers outside of what the great state of Georgia has done for them, unprecedented. And so I am hopeful it will come, and I'm hopeful that it will be beneficial on my farm as well. One of the things that we've talked about on the periphery is the anxiousness of some of our older farmers, and we do have an aging farming workforce in this great state, and the number one industry is agriculture in this great state, and anxiety is an issue. I get up at 4 o'clock every morning, and often at 4:30 I check Mike's weather page to see where the hurricane is. I have a recurring nightmare that another one's coming, and I've got to go pick some cotton. And it's I don't have anxiousness very often, but this is a game changer.
Well, let me interrupt you there, because one of the things we were, as we were working on this, there was a study and there were some stories about the impact on the mental health of farmers in Georgia. And since you've touched on that in a personal way, I'm going to guess that you and maybe Commissioner Black and Representative Taylor all have, maybe, you know, some stories, or, I mean, obviously you don't want to reveal anything personal, but is that a real thing? And can you tell our audience about the stresses, the mental stress and health of Georgia's farmers?
Well, it is a real thing. A farmer is so resilient. He's used to adversity every single day. And if if he cuts a finger off, he's going to try and compensate and say, no, I really don't need any help. And a farmer really does not reach out much. So you're not going to find it in a study. You're not going to do a survey and find out where we have seen anxiety on farms. But just some of the stories that I personally experience is I'm not an anxious person, but when I wake up at 4:30 and there's no hurricane coming, and yet I cannot get out of my head that one is coming and I must pick cotton. Let me go look at the all the spaghetti models of the weather systems and make sure. Author Max Licato said one time, fear sees a threat, anxiety imagines one. And so that is, I mean, that's, you could replicate that thousands of times over Southwest Georgia of farmers that are having a tough time. And we are so resilient. We are so self-sufficient that we don't reach out. And that is not good.
Representative Taylor, you obviously have a lot of constituents who are farmers. Have you heard these kinds of stories?
Yes, I have. This impact of this hurricane was like a sucker punch to our farmers. There's no other way to say it. All of the communities were hit by it. But to them, it's very personal. I spoke to a farmer just yesterday. He still has, one of his barns was totally flattened. All his equipment is in it. He still hasn't been able to get anybody out there to fix it, get it up, to try to salvage what he can. It's gone, and he knows that it is. But it's devastating to them. I think farming has always been a profession of hope. There was an old saying back in the 1930s, trying to get farmers to go back to the fields. But at some point in time, where are they going to give up on the hope? And how do they cope with this? We need resources available for them, but that brings another whole issue up, medical care resources in rural communities. They're far and few between. It's something we are looking at. A part of the rural county, rural council that we're looking at is health care and providing for those farmers. It's hard to do it when you're working from sun up to sundown and you're looking at what's going to happen to the next event. When is it going to happen? So it is fear. I was just at a women's event and we had to pick a picture. And the picture you picked had to be about courage. And I picked the picture of the farmer.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, again, as we were preparing for the show, really, right, Josh, we could say that farmers are at the nexus of so many things happening right now, high-stress things. We've got this hurricane and its aftermath, and we have the arguments over climate change and whether that's contributing. We have tariffs. We have, you know, politics and financing. We have mental health. It just seems like, gosh, to be a farmer, you're just in the middle of all the hardest things that our society's facing, and you're not very visible in many ways.
Absolutely. You're isolated in many ways from, you know, the national media, and lately you're having everything piled on top of you one after another, and it seems like you can't catch a break. It's been said that farming is being a farmer is something akin to having a gambling addiction. And right now, I would say the house is winning.
Yeah. Phil Buckalter, I mean, you've been listening to this discussion about farmers. I mean, we're literally talking about you. What's your reaction to this? I mean, what does it feel like to be a farmer in Georgia right now?
Well, I'm going to tell you, a lot of times one extreme follows another. Now, we like about probably 10 days picking our peanuts. We can't hardly pick cotton and peanuts at the same time, but as soon as Cody gets finished plowing up the peanuts, he'll get on the cotton picker. But I'm so worried. You know, we need 2 inches of rain right now. I mean, the day or the night, tomorrow, whatever, just to help people plow up their peanuts. But I'm so scared. Like I said, one extreme follows another. It may sit in here for a week. We don't need a week of rain. We just need 2 inches come in and get out and help us get finish up these peanuts. You know, it's the dirt is just so hard, and if you don't have any irrigation, you just cannot hardly get them up. And then you know, it's just ongoing. You know, we still working. Last week we were working on fences in woods where the water had dried up, where we could get in there and work on them because the cows was getting out. And we got three carpenters working on a barn today, a year ago, that got blowed down. So there's just so many scenarios that fights against us. But the good Lord just gives us strength, and we just move on. And I want to touch on this, and I want the commissioner to really hear this. We have really got a problem with hogs, and I know this don't have anything to do with the storm and all that stuff, but I do want him to realize that we got to have some help with these wild hogs, and I know that's off of the record, and y'all not want to talk about that right now. But,
let's go ahead and pause for a moment and just explain that, Commissioner Black. I mean, the wild hog problem. Again, we've got a lot of people listening who are unfamiliar with farming, and anything we can share with them about the challenges is worth doing. So explain what Phil means.
Kevin, if Phil, I'm all with you, brother. We need. I would love for us to declare war on them, and to the extent that I'm able, we have. For your listeners, Kevin, there are feral wild hogs are just a devastating beast. They ruin pastures. You can plant peanuts and come back the next day, and the hogs have gone right down the row and dug up all the seed. I know there are a number of our research universities are looking at trying to, how do you uninterrupt the birth cycle? How do you, there are not any really safe products yet that can be targeted just to try to eradicate hogs that don't harm other wildlife, because we don't want to do that. There's some aggressive hunting and trapping regimens that you can use, but once again, there's such a prolific animal, and that's what Phil's talking about, because it's just a...
I want to interrupt you right here. Hogs work 24 hours a day, days a week, and they're not... stupid. You know, most of the time you think about hog being stupid, but we built traps, and we caught a few hogs, but all of a sudden they have learned about them traps, and they have taught their children not to go inside of them. We'll kill a few, with the rifles and all. But and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to be sure that everybody knew that hogs they just work 24 hours a day. Go ahead.
Yep. Thank you, Phil, for that, because everybody needs to know that. Now, I promise you, we're going to – I wish I had the answer. It'd be a big deal, but it's certain that we're not far from it.
Commissioner Black, let me ask you kind of a broad question here, because of your leadership role. I mean, what is the future for farmers and agriculture in Georgia? I mean, we've talked a lot about the challenges farmers face, and obviously your job is to keep the biggest industry in Georgia going and thriving. What do you see, again, for our listeners, what do you think Georgia just has to know and pay attention to?
Kevin, this business is cyclical, and it has been for a long time. That's kind of hard to – it's hard to kind of embrace that when you're in one of these down cycles. What we need is certainty in the area of exports. We need certainty in trade policy. We need certainty in a regulatory environment. Here's an example. 5, 6, 7 years ago, the EPA started going down the road of changing our diesel engines. And the only kind of tractor you can buy in the United States now has what is called a Tier 4 engine, and it has about 20% less productivity, and it costs about 20% more. yet our competitors in Mexico and Canada and all over the world are still operating with normal diesel engines. It's those kinds of things that have put us behind, kind of the eight ball. We've got to add more value to Georgia products here. That's why our Georgia Grown initiative has been so popular. I'm hopeful that we can get more aggressive in areas like school nutrition and make sure we're not just feeding the largest restaurant in the state every day, unlabeled products from who knows where. And so it's, from their origin. I think those kind of things are the positive. We've got to, turn inward, hopefully get our consumers buying more Georgia-grown products. And I think that's just a partial answer. But hopefully, continued research at our universities has to be we've had great strides in efficiency, whether it's irrigation or plant productivity or new seeds or new products that we can develop here. But it is very, very tough business.
Representative Taylor, quickly,
I wanted to add something, Gary. I think you'll appreciate this. As bad as things are and as much of a recovery we need, last weekend, Grady County had their own Grady Grown. We had a dinner in Wiggum, and it was bringing the farmers together and the community celebrating farming. And it was wonderful to see that. I think that's an upbeat note that we need to remember.
Okay, well, thank you. Tom, our producer, is letting me know that we're almost out of time. I think we've got just a little bit more to go. Josh, one last question as you go out and cover these things. What is it that you would remind people to keep in mind as you go out and talk to farmers and produce these stories that you've learned? And just have a few seconds.
The thing that I've learned most is just that they can find themselves pretty easily out on a ledge, and we need to, we often forget where our food comes from and where our products come from, and we just need to keep these folks in mind and remember that they need our help.
Okay. Thank you, Josh. That'll do it for today's Political Rewind. I would like to thank our guests, Representative Darlene Taylor, AJC reporter Josh Sharp, Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black, Representative Clay Perkle, and farmer Phil Berhalter. Thank you all for joining us today for a great conversation, and thank you for listening. Remember, if you missed any part of the show, or if you liked it so much that you want to listen again, you can find it on gpbnews.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kevin Riley. Bill Noggett will be back with you for an all-new Political Rewind on Friday at 2:00.